Hello, everyone. Welcome you all to Drive Through HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals. Where we have global guests coming up today, we have a wonderful guest joining us from Spain and really wanting to talk more about leadership and management, which I'm really, really interesting to hear. So in Dallas, it's pretty sunny outside, and William is traveling. So this is going to be me doing a show with our wonderful guest. All right, so let's meet our guest, Chris Taylor. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
Great. Well, glad to have you here with us today. So what's going on in Spain?
What's going on in Spain? Well, thankfully, it's raining for the first time in about 3 months, so we're topping up the plants and reinvigorating the soil. But other than that, just enjoying life and hanging out with you.
Well, glad to have you here and glad to hear that you're having a great time. So, Chris, why don't you kick off and talk a little bit about yourself and what you do so that our audience can learn more about you.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Canadian. I'm from Toronto originally. I run a company called ActionableBooks.com or Actionable Books. We're basically, you know, the way that we position it is that if TED is ideas worth spreading, then Actionable is ideas worth implementing. What we're doing is taking ideas from top business books and we're distilling them down into bite-sized units that make it easy for busy professionals to apply those ideas into their work and into their life. And it's been a journey. I've been doing this now for 7 years, I guess. The company's grown through various iterations. I have a background in sales and sales management and learned a lot through managing a commission-based sales force around retention and loyalty and really building long-term relationships with people when salary is not an option. And that led into what we do now with Actionable Books and some of the programs that we have available there.
Great. Wonderful to hear. So what it is that one thing or probably one of the many things that is keeping you up at night these days?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things that I found really interesting, Nisha, is give you a little bit of context. Our main program is called Actionable Workshops, and it's basically a tool that enables and empowers, equips, if you will, a team leader with everything they need to run an hour-long learning session with their direct reports. And it's a conversation-based learning session. It's very low-key. It's very conversational. It's written. Everything we do is written at a grade 6 reading level. It's designed to be extremely approachable for anybody to pick it up and run it. That's the whole idea. What's frustrating to me or trying to me, and it leads to a broader conversation, is, you know, we have clients all over the world, and we work with organizations in virtually every industry. And yet I'll have those conversations, and they happen once a month. I'm talking to someone in an HR department or in a senior leadership role, and when we share the idea of team leaders actually delivering material to their staff, whether it's supported or unsupported, there's this block that goes up. There's this response that comes in where people say, well, you know, that's great, but my people wouldn't be capable of that. And I, you know, gently tell them or remind them that this is written at a grade 6 reading level. If your people graduated high school, they're more than capable of running these sessions. And it's really, it's a normal conversation. But I think there's this issue there, though, with the powers that be that are controlling various programs, you know, thinking about their people in a way that puts limitations on what that is or can be. And I'm not, you know, obviously it's impacting me from a company standpoint from time to time, but I think in a broader picture, a bigger picture, when we're in an HR capacity or when we're in a senior leadership role and we're making these blanket statements about what our people are capable of or not, it's a really interesting subject to me that I'm curious to talk with you about.
Wow. Yeah, that is true. I mean, even during the pre-show, you talked a little bit about the challenges that you're facing from the management team in an organization in order to convince them or probably the gap that you feel that these leaders are feeling, okay, we need a training or probably we need to hire a third party to train our own employees. And what you're doing is an interesting perspective in a way that you are helping an employee in an organization and thereby he can go ahead and train his team members. Because ultimately, when an employee, the tendency is that he is probably going to be convinced by his own manager rather than somebody from outside. So this is really, really interesting. So what do you say are some of the key skills that every leader should have?
It's a broad question, Nisha, but
I think,
you know, there's a couple, absolutely. I mean, a couple of things that come to mind for me from what we see from our clients where, you know, and I see leaders, you know, throughout the organization, but if we're talking about team leaders, so someone who's managing its direct reports, I think there's a few things that come to mind. You know, one of them is just pulling from The Go-Giver from Bob Berg's book. It's that idea that it's not about me, it's about you as an employee. It's that servant-based leadership mentality of, you know, my job here is to make your job easier and to feel as though you have support from someone that can sort of go to bat for you. And I think, you know, so often it's so easy to get caught up in the politics side and start to, you know, focus on ourselves and how we're moving forward. But, you know, I would love to see organizations, and we do see this with some organizations, where they're recognized for the achievements of their direct reports as much so, if not more so, than being recognized for their own accomplishments as individuals. And I think that to the role of anyone is to support their direct reports. And if they have direct reports, it's to support those direct reports. I think that's a big piece of it. I think one of the other characteristics of a strong leader that I've seen factors in this place of curiosity. So, you know, trying to rise above or move beyond the mentality of this is the black and white, this is the way it is, and understanding or appreciating that there are nuances to every conversation and every decision that's made, every reason for behavior. We can make assumptions as to why someone's acted the way they've had, or we can get curious and ask the question and explore the reasons why someone might be doing something. And I think that, you know, that leads to better patience, that leads to stronger relationships because people feel as though they're being heard, understood, and appreciated. So I think that, you know, those two skill sets of really focusing on delivering to the other person and...
Great. Well, in fact, what you have pointed out is an interesting thought, and that is a great segue to my next question, where you say the reasons for behavior or finding out why someone is doing the way or reacting the way they do. So most often, you know, managers tend to have a mentality to judge others or go under some judgment and make some wrong decisions, right? So what do you recommend to those managers to, in order to be not to become judgmental, but to find out the reason? Chris, are you there? I guess we have some technical glitches. Hey, Chris, are you there? Nope. I'm not sure if I'm not able to hear or if there is a problem with our laptop radio. But I really, really wish Chris will call in again on our show. And Chris, if you're listening to this, please call in to 347-996-5600 so that way we will be able to hear you. Hey, Chris, are you there?
No, I'm in the queue. Can you hear me? I'm in the queue.
Yeah, I can hear you. I'm so sorry for putting up with this technology.
Oh, okay. Not to worry at all. You sound very faint, but okay.
All right. So I'm not sure where you missed me, but my last question was a great segue to what you have already discussed about, you know, the reasons for behavior, finding out the reasons for behavior. And especially managers have a tendency to judge others based on how they act, based on how others act, how others react. So what do you recommend to those managers in order to not to be judgmental, but connect with others by finding the reason behind why they act the way they do?
Sure. You know, there's this exercise that we run teams through in one of the workshops where basically it's such a simple exercise, but it really helps people to reframe expectations. And the idea is to sit in a room, everyone sitting in a room together, and to make a list of the 10 things that you sense. So whether it's something you see or hear or smell, taste, or touch, and the 10 things that are most prominent to you, and you write them down in as specific detail as possible. And then you go around the room and you share your list with the people in the room. And inevitably, unless there was something really noticeable in the room, everyone's got a different list, right? And everyone's got different things that they're focused on. And what it leads to in a conversation is that how our brains process information. And how we're only aware of a very, very, very small percentage, it's less than a fraction of a percent, of what's actually happening around us is what we sort of take in our senses. And then from that, the story that we tell ourselves about what those impulses mean is based on our past and our experience and our own sort of baggage, if you will. And so what you can end up with through this very simple exercise is the appreciation that everyone is taking in the world in totally different ways. And that the way in which you are seeing a situation is based entirely on what sort of caught your attention from a sense standpoint, and then what story you've put that through. And there's a particular activating system and your internal representation, if you want the technical terms for it. but that simple exercise can start a conversation around why do we see the world in different ways? And when we make an assumption about something, are we making an assumption based on absolute fact, big T truth, or is this something that's being filtered through, you know, our own sort of experience and the angle in which we took something in? So that getting that conversation started can be a really powerful way to initiate the conversation around the fact that, you know, we need to probably treat behaviors differently.
Right. And my next thought while you were talking about this is, you know, normally when managers, they tend to be just a manager instead of being a leader or instead of being a coach or mentor that normally any team member would like to have. So for a manager's perspective, what would you say to help them, you know, how would they know when to manage and when to coach?
When to manage and when to coach. You know, one of the other pieces that we really focus on with the workshops is clarifying objectives from the start. You know, I work in a unique environment, Nisha. I have a team of 8 spread between 4 countries and 6 time zones. We do not have a physical permanent office. We have only virtual connections and relationships. And one of the things that I've learned through that experience is that we don't have a choice. We have to have those clear expectations and priorities ahead of time. We have to have clear parameters on what that looks like, and then we measure our progress towards those. You can't manage by walking around. It's not possible. And what I've found through the experience of having this team set up is that this idea of clarifying objectives up front is, you know, most people would say, yeah, that's important. But so many of us don't do it because there's always this fallback to, I can catch them in the office tomorrow. I don't need to send out a detailed explanation of where we're going or a recap of this call because I'll see you in the hall, right? That sort of thing. And I think that we become a little too lax in how we sort of frame projects or frame objectives so that we are then having to be managing the whole way along because we're the only one that knows where it should be going and we're figuring it out 5 minutes before it needs to be done. When we can have that conversation at the front end of a project and to clarify where we're going, what success looks like, what the derailers will be, any sort of parameters around that, then the conversations throughout are naturally coaching because everyone has a shared idea of what we're working towards. I don't need to manage in the sense of, you know, have you done your work yet? Have you done your work yet? If I trust the people I work with, and that's a whole other thing, but if I trust the people that I work with and I am clear on where we're going as a group and they've committed to that path and said, yes, I will get this done, then my role is how do I help? And, you know, where do I provide support for you? So I think out of managing and into leading is to focus your management side, i.e. painting the picture on where we're going and making sure everyone has the need at the very beginning and then scheduled touch points throughout. And other than that, you're in coaching mode. You're in, you know, what are you working on? Where are you stuck? And how do I help?
Right. Well, 4 countries and 6 time zones, it's really challenging and it's really global as well. So So when it comes to
you
might be traveling around the world, you might be working with different people from different parts of the culture. So you have seen every edge of diversity, that I must say. So what do you recommend to those team members that are listening to you right now or to this audience when it comes to managing a diverse group of employees, especially in the United States? If you look at the workforce, is especially diverse. They have Asian employees, they have Indian employees, and in fact, different states itself have different culture. So when it comes to managing a diverse workforce, what are your tips and techniques in order to have a trustworthy between each other?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll preface this by saying that I took a diversity intelligence quiz about a year ago, I guess, like one of these assessments on how sort of, you know, what's your DQ sort of thing as opposed to your IQ or EQ. Mm-hmm. And I didn't score very well on it. I think from a cultural bias standpoint, I mean, it's probably not my strong suit. And yet, you're right, we work with people all over the world in different teams. And I think that one of the challenges that I have with, you know, sort of labeling, you know, if you're working with young people or if you're working with women if you're a man or men if you're a woman, here's the ways in which you should go about that. I think the challenge with me on any of that, and then obviously on ethnicity as well, is that it limits the personal connection. I mean, you're already, whether you're trying to do it from a strong standpoint or not, I mean, you're going into labels, right? And I find that the best way to work with anybody, regardless of where they're from or what their background is or gender or skin color, I mean, it's get to know them, right? I mean, it's find out what's important to them, find out what matters to them, and celebrate that with them. One of the things I coach new managers through is that if you can understand what's exciting to people on your team, that's great. You can support them in that. You don't need to be excited about that. You don't have to have a common bond around, oh, that person's really into Star Wars and I'm really into Star Wars. That's great. If you are, fabulous. But if that person is really into Star Wars and you're not, you can still be curious about why they're excited about that, what they like about that. You know, I mentioned it at the beginning, is that people fundamentally want to be heard, understood, and appreciated. And if you can ask them questions about something that is of interest to them, work-wise or otherwise, if you can show genuine interest, not in what they're talking about, but in them and the fact that they're excited about this, it's one of the fastest shortcuts I know to strengthening trust and relationships. And again, that goes cross-culturally and around the globe. So it's one thing that I've seen work really well, is just, you know, embrace that natural curiosity. We're all born curious, and then we sort of lose that as we start to assume we know a lot. When you can drop that and get back to asking questions for the sake of curiosity and for the sake of, you know, showing people that you're genuinely interested in what's interesting to them, this isn't management. This is relationships 101. You know, it's as a parent, you know, if you've got a kid who's really into something but you're not, you still show interest in that because you love the kid. And you can do the same sort of thing with your employees and really, you know, strengthen those relationships. People just want to be heard.
Totally. So what would you like to share your top tip to those new managers in order to develop a team of rock stars?
So let's sort of lay out a little bit of a list. I think, you know, clarity around objectives, putting bookends on projects. If your work's not naturally project-based, putting bookends around it so it becomes a project and there's a point of work and there's a point of celebration, gets people excited, gets people clear, gets people focused. You know, if you've got someone who's not a rock star employee, it's not going to change overnight. It's like if you've never exercised in your life and you want a six pack, it's not going to happen in a week. It's that idea of incremental gains, incremental growth. You know, Robin Sharma has this expression, I'm sure it's not his, but of 1% gains and how we can really make radical change in our life through small incremental growth. And so, you know, if you're a new manager, if you're a new employee at a new company, if you're a new executive, I think anytime we're in a new role, there's that daunting sense of all the things we don't know. And we can make small incremental improvements towards achieving whatever that is. That's, I mean, it's what we do with workshops, right? I mean, with actionable workshops, it's designed around helping teams make incremental gains in their collaboration, in their ability to innovate effectively, in their communication skills, time management skills. It's not about becoming the ultimate productivity master overnight. It's about what's the one thing that I can take away from this experience and apply today. And I think that that's something that we can take and carry over into all of our lives.
Wonderful. So most of the time, you know, as an HR professional, when we recommend our management to hire a third party to take a leadership training or to have a workshop, they normally ask about the return on investment or the cost. So all those are, you know, the number one factor that comes to mind. But when it's time to convincing those executives on how this leadership coaching positively impacting our organization's performance, how would you want HR professionals to go about?
I'm so glad you asked that question because it is something that's such a hot topic. And, you know, it's the same conversation that on the other side of my life I hear in social media all the time too, right, from marketing departments. How do we measure the ROI of social media? And it's the same thing with training. And, you know, I think the challenge with so here's my glib answer is that you can't. I mean, how do you put an ROI on a loving relationship with your spouse? You can't, right? But you know that it's better when you're in a loving relationship than if you're fighting. You just know that. Everybody's happier, things are better. However, people want more sort of quantifiable metrics than that. I think, you know, it's funny. I was interviewing Pat Lencioni for my podcast the other day, and we were talking about the mentality that companies bring to the table when they're looking at investing in training programs. And if they are I keep in mind this is two trainers talking, so we're a little biased on it, but it was this mentality around, you know, if they're looking at the metric side first and foremost and exclusively, then they're missing the people side, which is sort of the point. If it's they're focused on the people side, but they need to get approval from the bean counters, then fine. Then I appreciate the fact that we need to have some metric. What I've been looking at and really sort of fascinated with for the last couple of years with the National is on behavior change tracking. So after a particular learning experience, how can you immediately collect input from the participants to say what their biggest takeaway was and how they're planning on applying it? I think so much of training exists at a 20,000 foot level where we go, yeah, it's really neat. There was a lot of great stuff in there. Then we go back to our desks and we've got, you know, 30 emails and 4 voicemails to catch up on. And we've got that meeting to prep for that's next. And it's all out of our heads. So I think the real value is in how do we focus in on that one thing that's going to be applied? And then how do we, through the help of technology, track that and measure it to see where the real behavior change is taking place? Because I think when you can actually track, okay, we went to this learning experience. From that learning experience, each individual committed to, here's what I took away from it. Then I applied it, and then we can measure that it's being applied and validate that. Then after the application's taken place, it's a lot easier to tie it to core business metrics, right? Did that behavior change? Did the fact that that process is being done faster now or done in this way, how did that impact bottom line activity from a cost-saving initiative or from a revenue-generating initiative? And when we can make that link, and I think that missing piece is the personal level of commitment. So what is it that the individual took away and how are they applying it? That becomes a really powerful way to track it. So this is what we've done with Actionable. I mean, anytime a leader inside an organization runs a workshop, every participant commits on a dashboard as to what they took from it and how they're planning to apply it. And then there's a double blind where the leader and the participant are both saying whether it happened or not. So that's on an individual basis, but you extrapolate that out over a 15,000 person organization and you start to see hundreds and thousands of behavior changes taking place and you can quantify that. You can start to see what real impact that made on the business. So it's the beginnings. We're just started with it ourselves. It's sort of, you know, cutting edge stuff. I know Gallup's doing a lot of work on measuring the financial impact of engagement levels and how you can track training to engagement. I think it's the next frontier is how do you quantify soft skill development, and it's something that I'm extremely interested in. So glad you brought that up, Nisha. Well done pulling it out from nowhere.
Thank you. Thank you. So the next question is for the startup or for those organizations who necessarily won't have that type of a budget in order to hire experts like you or probably hire any other third parties out there to take them through a training process. But they might be thinking of leveraging the people probably within the organization, sometimes like reverse mentoring or sort of. So what do you recommend to those startups in order to kick off an excellent coaching or workshop within the organization in that initial level?
For sure. So first of all, I think there's a ton of free or extremely inexpensive resources out there that you can grab onto on how to run a strong development session or a strong employee, sort of, as you say, the reverse mentoring piece. I think there's tons of guidebooks on that. I mean, our modules, people buy them for a couple hundred bucks. Like, we're not outrageously expensive, right? But there's a lot of great stuff out there. What I used to do was I would grab a book or an article that I thought was particularly interesting. I try to go for the little books because that would allow people to read it. And I would make a list of 5 or 6 questions that I thought would be good to talk through as a group, what their take on it was, how they could apply it. And then I'd sit down and we'd talk. I honestly don't – this is sort of the cruel joke to what we do with Actionable. I mean, we're building more and more sophisticated tools, and that's great because that's what people want, but you don't need it. I mean, honestly, you can spend a few hours putting together a few well-thought-out questions that are relevant to what's happening in the organization right now, base it on a third-party piece of content, whether it's an article or a book, and you can have a rich, engaging conversation with your team. You know, I think what holds people back is the fear of the unknown. It's, what if I host this thing and no one shows up? Or worse, what if they show up and they just blink at me and they don't actually say anything? My response would be, there's a good chance that'll happen first time around. If you're... if it's an organization that has never done anything like this, people are going to be skeptical. Just keep with it. You know, do these types of things. Set up conversations. All you need to do is step out of the rush of, you know, all the fires that need to be put out and a constant churn of things that need to be done. Spend an hour, spend 45 minutes connecting on a human level about something a little bit deeper than business activities or business, you know, priorities. It's that whole quadrant 2 side of stuff. I mean, this is the importance, not urgent, is to have meaningful conversations with the people you spend most of your life with. It's shocking that it doesn't happen. I was talking to David Berkus the other day, who just wrote a new book called The Myth of Creativity. And he's a professor, and he was talking about his staff meeting where he's sitting around the table with the 10 other professors. And he was looking around the room thinking, I bet you maybe 2 people in this room actually know the name of my book. And we agree that's that. So these are people that you spend most of your waking hours with. You should have some insight into what's happening in their life, or at least what they're excited about. And so I think, you know, opening the doors to those conversations is a really powerful first step.
Wonderful. So, Chris, thank you so much for joining with us today. We have about 1 minute left at this point. So what do you I know you read a lot of books and you use a lot of techniques of experts out there and implement at actionablebooks.com as well. So which is that one single book that every leader or manager should read?
That one single book that every leader or manager should read. Wow. I would say, I go with The Go-Giver, Go-Giver by Bob Berg and his co-author. It's a
Go-Giver.
Great one, well worth reading.
Wonderful. So, Chris, thank you so much again. How can people connect with you, find out more details about you and what you do, and share us about actionablebooks.com as well?
Sure. We're on pretty much every social media channel, Actionable Books, and the home, the mothership, is actionablebooks.com. I'm there too, so drop by and say hello.
Great, and hope you have a great rest of the day in Spain, and look forward to having you again on the show, Chris. So, ladies and gentlemen, and to every audience, thank you so much for listening.